number 07-1430, Suzanne Atenas against Stephen A. Perry. Mr. Gomberg.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. Excuse me. My name is Barry Gomberg. I represent Suzanne Atenas. Your Honor, I'd just like to briefly give a little background information that's already in the brief. Ms. Atenas received a bachelor's degree in political science from Northwestern. She received a Master of Public Administration from the University of Illinois at Chicago in 1983 and received a MBA degree from Keller School of Management with distinction in 2003. She started at the GSA in 1984 and received four certifications in contract management, from the National Contract Management Division. Up until the incidents that occurred that are explained in the brief, Ms. Atenas had no discipline-related issues until these incidents. She was not promoted from her position, pay scale as a GS-11, from 1990 through her dismissal date in July of 2003. The GSA alternated plaintiff's position between a contract specialist and a contract administrator for the years 1990 to the year 2003. Ms. Atenas was not promoted, although she maintained a zero delinquency rate and followed through with every work assignment she was given throughout her career at GSA.
Mr. Gomberg, it would help me at least if you would focus on what exactly is the forbidden reason for not changing her job classification or promoting her to GS-12, because, you know, sometimes worthy people don't get promoted and sometimes management makes a mistake and so on. But the law only protects certain categories of decisions. So what links any of these things to something that would be retaliatory or otherwise discriminatory? Because I'm having a lot of trouble seeing that on this record.
Sure, Your Honor. Well, I wanted to answer your question in respect to a couple of instances. And I hope I do that. I'm sure you'll let me know if I don't. But, for example, in February of 2003, Ms. Atenas met with two supervisors, Ms. Brown and Ms. Henderson. Both of these individuals happened to be black. This was subsequent to a very significant and severe incident with one of the top supervisors, Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith. Yeah.
And what I would suggest and submit to the court is that the lower court did not consider these instances together. The lower court sort of isolated them from one another and also dismissed what happened in the Smith incident by saying that if Ms. Atenas had done this in most employment situations, she would have been discharged.
Well, but I guess what I thought the court was trying to say is, you know, there's this encounter she has with Mr. Smith, and it's a heated discussion. She's insubordinate. And linking that, as I say, to any kind of ground that's protected under the statute is quite difficult for me. Again, I'm not the person to say whether, Ms. Atenas and Mr. Smith were getting along or should they have gotten along, but the statute only protects certain things. And I frankly can't even see why the race of Ms. Brown, for example, is pertinent. You know, what does it matter?
It doesn't per se. But I think what we're talking about is not race. In my example, what I was trying to do and answer your question is I'm trying to explain, and I think you know this, the environment in which Ms. Tennis found herself. It was, as our brief indicates, a hostile and abusive environment. Now, Judge Phillips said that it did not rise to the level of being abusive and hostile. And my point is that if you take these instances together, the Smith instance, and I have to take issue with the fact that Mr. Tennis was insubordinate, certainly not to the point where, as Judge Phillips said, she should have been discharged in any employment situation. Because I think the standard that is being used to assess Ms. Tennis's actions should also be applied to Mr. Smith. In other words, a seasoned supervisor, if someone reacts the way Ms. Tennis reacted in that circumstances to his hostility, that doesn't necessarily say, okay, she's insubordinate and she has no case and wasn't being abused or it wasn't a hostile environment. But then she goes from the Smith meeting, and then she goes alone, even though she had a union representative, she went alone, met with Henderson and Brown, and again she's being abused in a very severe way, being loudly talked to and with disrespect. And these instances taken together, to me, as we say in our brief, indicates that it rose to the level of hostility and abusive. And
but
my
based
reading,
on what? I mean, based on her, where is the reason to think that this hostility was anything but, you know, maybe a poorly managed workplace or something? Where is an evidence that is based on her sex, or it's based on her religion, or it's based on her race, or it's based on her age, or it's based on any of the many categories that we might be concerned about? I don't really see where protected activity is involved for a retaliation complaint. I mean, what's the link?
Well, the link is that there are the defendant failed to show, and there's no record that anyone else in other than the protected classes that Ms. Tennis is in were treated this way. She's an 18-year career employee. She's being subjected to this type of abusive, severe, discriminatory.
But who was comparable to her in all respects, including things like, you know, supervisor, things like a record of criticism? I guess they're, you know, back behind a lot of this is some criticism of her timeliness with some of her work, this letter of instruction that she gets in 1999 from Walkup, disorderly conduct reprimands. Did the other people have all of that?
The thing that we're missing is the common supervisory situation, as Judge Phillip points out. And as we say in our brief, Your Honor, is the and I may be pronouncing this, but my reading of the Radu court, R-A-D-U-E court, indicates that you don't, yes, normally you'd want to have the same supervisors. But in this case, there were other people who were treated more favorably, not in the protected class, admittedly different supervisors. But my point is, first of all, it's not required, at least by that court, that it have that the same supervisors be involved. But also I believe, and this is my argument, maybe it's a little novel, is that in reality it's very difficult to put the standard of people who work in the workplace every day and say, okay, if you were treated differently, you got to point out the fact that who it is and they are being supervised by the same person. This is a small unit. Maybe it are different supervisors, but they're all sitting next to each other. They're all in the same environment. And it's unrealistic to say somebody's got to point to the same supervisor to show that they're being treated differently than somebody else.
If they were all the same race and treated this way, would it be different?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
If the supervisors, I'm not clear the race of the various supervisors, but if they were all the same race, gender, and treated her this way, would there still be a case?
Well, I don't think the issue is regarding the race or gender of the supervisors.
What is it? Because
I think it's
Judge
the people
asking, what's the what is it? What, she's in. She's alleging several protected classes and is,
right.
is alleging discrimination based on her being in that protected class.
Yes, Your Honor. As we point out in the brief, it's the people who are affected. We name a number of people who are not in the same protected classes as Ms. Atenas, who are treated more favorably. We point particularly to letters of instruction for these people, admittedly different supervisors, but much more kind in terms of how quickly they had to respond, certainly weren't subject to the kind of meetings where they were abused and put into a hostile environment. And they're all, those are the comparables, the people who received similar letters of instruction, but were not, for example, treated the way Ms. Atenas. And I want to say something further. Judge Phillips, in a footnote, says that Ms. Atenas's letter was actually more kind because the letter provided her with an opportunity to go for counseling. I would like to say, with all due respect, that's not necessarily more kind. I think that's an indication that Ms. Atenas, that someone thinks she needs counseling and she's different than everybody else, because none of these other individuals, the comparables, were told you're such in such bad psychological shape that you need counseling. So with all due respect, those are the comparables.
Thank you, Mr. Gumber.
Thank you, sir.
We'll hear now from Mr. Lorenzen.
May it please the court and counsel. I think that there's little doubt that the court got it right in this case, Your Honor, and I want to talk about three things that I think I'd like to focus the court's attention on to persuade you of that. First of all, direct evidence. Second, comparables. And third, legitimate business reasons. The first, and I think this goes to your question earlier, Your Honor, is what's the evidence? What is the link between these actions that were taken, some of which aren't adverse actions under the law, but regardless, what's the link to any of these protected classes? The only evidence that shows up in the entire case that there was any discriminatory animus, the only thing comes light years from direct evidence, and I think it's light years from any real link to discrimination. It's this 1996 conversation that Ms. Atenas allegedly had with one of her supervisors, where her supervisor asked what nationality she was, and then wouldn't talk to her, according to Ms. Atenas, for the rest of that lunch.
Right, she says Assyrian, and then that's the end of the conversation.
Supposedly. And yeah. For the purposes of summary judgment, we've assumed that that's true, although the supervisor certainly denies that. But that's
how many years before the alleged adverse actions?
The story, the very first disciplinary action, starts in 1999, but the first one that's complained about in this case is the 2002 December suspension for 10 days. So you're talking about something that is years away from the events in question, was never complained about certainly at that time. And even if it was, it's such a disjointed, attenuated remark that the court couldn't draw any discriminatory animus from that incident, even if it was true. So clearly there's no direct evidence here. But the only evidence of any discriminatory animus is this years-old conversation. Second, comparables. Because Ms. Atenas can certainly still proceed under the McDonnell-Douglas test to attempt to establish a prima facie case. She offers no evidence, no real evidence of comparables in any of the situations that she's complained about. And I'd like to just remind the court, she put a lot of evidence in her deposition testimony that she thought was comparables. However, the evidence amounted to things like saying that one of her coworkers, Dorothy Price, was Jewish. And when I asked her why, she said, well, because of her mannerisms, she brought matzo ball soup to a holiday party. She said another one of her coworkers had to be German because she liked sauerbraten, and that she was Lutheran because all Germans are Lutheran. That is clearly not the kind of evidence that establishes the basis for the district court to do any comparison of comparables to see if someone in a similar situation was treated differently because they were outside a protected class. Lastly, legitimate business reasons. even if Ms. Atanas could satisfy her obligation of providing a prima facie case in one of the two methods, the defendant has offered numerous reasons for the actions that it took against Ms. Atanas. And she has come light years from establishing that her supervisors honestly believed her reasons. In order to go to trial, she would have, if she had established a prima facie case, having been faced with these legitimate business reasons offered by the General Services Administration, it was her duty to establish why the court, the district court, shouldn't have listened to those reasons, why those reasons amounted to a presumed, could be presumed to be a lie, a cover-up.
I don't know that I've ever seen a record where supervisors spend so much time threatening to call in Federal Protective Services, though. I mean, couldn't she think that was quite an overreaction to what was going on?
It really, Your Honor, I'll tell you, first of all, I'll tell you, looking at the record, I've never seen a record where an employee takes the kind of actions they did against their supervisor. But having said that, let's say it was an overreaction. That we can look at this and say, geez, you know, that was kind of a little much, perhaps. She has to prove that the supervisors in question didn't honestly believe that it was necessary to call Federal Protective Service if she wouldn't leave. And let me remind the court of one of those instances. Her second-level supervisor, her boss's boss, says, I want to meet with you to talk about this five-day suspension. She tells him no. I didn't do anything wrong. I don't need to meet with you. He says, be up in my office at 2 o'clock. She comes up to the office at 2 o'clock. They start having a discussion, and he declares that the meeting's over because he's too frustrated by it. The witness that he brings up goes to the door, opens the door. She slams it shut and says, no, this meeting's not over, and if you could suspend me like this, you must not be a Christian. You're not doing your job right, and you should be suspended. I don't think under the circumstances it'd be fair to say that the calling Federal Protection Services was an overreaction. Your Honors, unless you have further questions, we would ask that you affirm the district court. There's no direct evidence, there's no evidence of comparables, and there's nothing to rebut the legitimate non-discriminatory reasons the GSA gave for its actions against Ms. Atanas. So unless you have other questions, we'd ask that you affirm the district court's decision in this case.
Thank you, Mr. Lorenzen. How much time does Mr. Gumberg have? Sir, your time had expired. I'll give you a moment, 1 minute, if there is something that you would like to say.
Unfortunately, I'll mostly have to rely on what I said before in the brief, but I do want to indicate that despite counsel's statement about that incident and that meeting with Mr. Smith, I think there was sufficient evidence to indicate that, number one, Mr. Smith, to some degree, this is not a perfect or absolutely clear statement I'm making, but to some degree provoked that reaction, that there was no actual physical threat of him that required a threat back that a protective service was going to be called. And I think that again, not in isolation, but in total, if you look at the total circumstances, including the meeting with Henderson and Brown, that the situation presented to Ms. Atanas was abusive and hostile. And, Your Honors, we respectfully request that you reverse the lower court's decision in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gumberg.